Well, welcome everybody to the Cleveland Public Library Sports Research Center. And our guest today is Austin Carr, one of the voices of the Cavaliers, certainly the one who's quoted most often. The date that we're doing this is July 22nd, 2014. Mm-hmm. And it's been a pretty good summer for the Cavs so far. But let's begin with your story.
Okay.
Okay, let's begin at the beginning. Well, you're 66 years old.
Yes.
Born in March 1948.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Your dad worked for the government. Your mom was a nurse.
Right.
And you had a solid, stable home life that had a lot to do with your values growing up.
Yes.
Okay. You went to Catholic schools, and mm-hmm. then you wound up at Notre Dame.
Right.
Now, we were talking about the playgrounds and...
Mm-hmm.
And some of your catchphrases. We're gonna catch up on the rest of your career, but let's cover this right now. Because that came up in a conversation a little while ago.
Uh-huh.
Your catchphrases are not something that you lately invented.
No.
They went back to the way you guys talked on the playgrounds in Washington, D.C., such as throw the hammer down, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
All that was your trash talking back in those days?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just how we played. I mean, a lot of guys would... like the mouth off,
uh-huh.
especially the mouthy guys. There's always two or three, you know, that would overdo it.
Uh-huh.
But most of the guys, I mean, and all those things, you know, get that weak stuff out of here.
Uh-huh.
I mean, all that stuff, you know, it just came out. It just,
uh-huh.
and so as I started announcing, I just started incorporating some of that.
Okay, we're going to catch up with your announcing career.
Okay.
Then, fact is that you were the best college basketball player in the country. By the time your senior year came along, the NBA draft of 1971, you had already scored, 2,000 points in your college career at Notre Dame?
Mm-hmm.
Had been to the NCAA tournaments.
Right.
You scored 61 points in a tournament game.
Right.
Was that against Ohio U?
Yes, it was.
Okay, you were on the Notre Dame team that snapped UCLA's long 86-game winning streak or something?
Let me clarify that.
Okay.
When we beat them, they had won 48 straight non-conference games. Okay, then they went on an 88-game streak, and Shoemake's team beat them and broke the 88-game streak. We broke a 48-game streak. Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so you were the most acclaimed college basketball player of your senior year.
Yes.
Okay. Big time deal. Then the Cavs had as fate would have it, the Cavs, as usual, had the first pick in the draft.
Yeah, right.
We've been through that a lot.
That's right.
And they picked you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today the world stops when the number one player is picked.
Right.
Did it stop?
No.
No,
no, it didn't stop.
When you were picked number one?
No, it didn't stop. As a matter of fact, I was in art history class, and what happened was we had a break, and when the professor came back, he said we had, you know, we have a new NBA player in our midst, and the name said, and he kind of announced that I was the first player picked in the draft, and that was it. And we went on back. I went back, finished up. We had about another 20 minutes left in class. We finished that, and then I went straight to the phone, called my agent.
Compared to what happens now, that's astounding.
Yes.
Yes. Now, did you know that you were going to be the first player picked, had the Cavs told
you? No, because what had happened, Dan, was I had everybody thought they would take Elmo Smith.
Oh.
And they changed, they switched it up and picked me instead of Elmo.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Or Sidney Wicks at the time.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you knew that the draft was going on then?
Oh, yeah, you knew it was going on.
But it wasn't broadcast on television,
no
radio,
no nothing?
No, nothing.
It was just made. The draft was just made then. That was it.
Wow.
Yeah, it wasn't a big, you know, celebrity field, packed action thing like they do now where they take you and buy you a suit and bring your family in.
You know. Oh, they do look good today.
Don't they? Yes, they do.
So you were in art history class.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And so then you called your agent.
Yes.
Who was your agent? You already had
Lou
an agent.
Lou Chaffel. Yes, I had an agent then.
And his name was who?
Louis Chaffel. Louis Chaffel. And John Davids.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Were they Washington guys?
No, they're New York guys at the time, yeah, because I had met them when I was in New York playing in the Rutgers tournaments.
Uh-huh.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so then you come to Cleveland and you find that the year before was the Cavs' first year.
Right.
And they had drafted Bill Fitch, bought a couple of the Dell basketball books, college basketball guides, and that's how the Cavs did their first draft.
Right.
Now, how sophisticated was it a year later when they drafted you? Would you ever know that they scouted you? Did they scout you?
Not really. I don't think they did anything like they did today, where they have guys all over the country and in the world.
Yeah.
No, I just think that they might have made a phone call and asked somebody about me, and then they made the decision. I mean, I don't see, because it was nowhere near as sophisticated as it is now.
Okay. So then you're the NBA Rookie of the Year your first year?
Yeah, no, I made the All-Rookie team because I was hurt.
Oh.
Half that season.
Right.
But I still played long enough to make the All-Rookie team.
Okay. Right. So what was your injury that first year?
My foot.
Oh, okay.
Right, and I hurt it three times.
Really?
And I had to have a bone taken out of my hip and put into my foot to regenerate the area for growth.
Uh-huh. Yep. So then you went on to have several very outstanding years for the Cavs.
Right. Yeah, well, I was playing well, just that I couldn't stay healthy.
Really?
You know, and then that was my biggest. My only regret, Dan, with my professional career is that I didn't have a chance to play a healthy time. I mean, I wish I could have played without injury.
Yeah.
That would have changed just to see how I would have fared. If I had to play with no injuries, because what happens when you get injured, it changes your gait. So you run different. Like some nights, my knees were so bad, it felt like I was running on pebbles. You know, it would hurt so bad. And some nights, it didn't hurt at all.
Really?
But that's what injuries are. You're just not the same.
And of course, sports medicine was compared to today pretty primitive.
Yeah, yes, it was. Very primitive, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's jump ahead just a couple of years to the Miracle of Richfield team in 1976.
Boy. Okay.
When this city was on fire.
Yes.
The noise in the old Richfield Coliseum for those
definitely,
games.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I've never heard anything like it.
Right. That's
except
right.
when they turn on the PA system.
Yeah. That's right. That'll drown you right out.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that was... Was it as big a thrill for you guys as it was for the fans?
Oh, yes. I mean, it was even more, I think, for us because that year we would have games where we would be down by 20 and come back and beat people in a half. I mean, it just was an unbelievable year. And that was probably the best team I've ever played on as far as everybody accepting their role and the objective was to win. It was not about individual, and we got individual accomplishments because we were winning, not because guys set out for that individual goal.
I had asked you on another occasion if playing for Bill Fitch, how you liked him. He was he was not a sweet man to get along with.
No, he wasn't. Because, you know, like you and I had talked before, at that time, he had so many different personalities. So many different volatile guys, because the league was it was not like it is now. It had guys would come off the street and can make a team, you know. So you had personalities that were different. So and I think that's how Coach Fitch wanted to control. I mean, or try to keep some sanity. So what happened was, you know, and once he realized, like myself, Campy, that you didn't have to be on top of us. Because we're going to do what we have to do anyway. Because we want to win. So as opposed to somebody who has individual goals and only looking out for himself. So once we weeded out all those guys, that's when we started winning. And then because we got all 12 guys that focus on winning and as opposed to individual. Mm-hmm. And I think once that happened, Lenny Wilkins kind of helped him understand players a little bit better. And Nate Thurman did. And that kind of, and that's when he started to evolve, I think, as understanding the players as well as understanding himself.
Yes. Most people have agreed ever since then, almost 40 years, that the Cavs would have won the NBA championship that year.
I feel that same way.
Except for the injury to Jim Jones in practice between was it the Washington-Boston series?
Right. That was it. Because we were primed. We were primed ready to take it. And Boston knew it, you know. But when Jim hurt his foot, that was tough because we were such a well-organized unit that it really hurt us to take him out of the fold because we almost substituted five at a time. That's how good we were. And it just, when you take that one guy out and try to plug in another guy, it made Nate have to play too many minutes.
Nate Thurman, at that time, in his high 30s age-wise.
Right. And Luke Whitty, you know, who didn't play hardly at all. It really changed our sequence, and they beat us four games out of six. So I mean, in two of the games that we lost, we should have won. But you know, it happens that way. Everybody was disappointed though.
Although you know the earlier series, just before that with Washington, those games one after another went down to the wire to the last shot.
I know, unbelievable. And I think that's what got the city so into it is that it was so dramatic.
Yes.
Every game was like right down. You're right, right down to the last shot. I mean, so it kept your attention, it kept your nerves on edge. I mean, it just kept you. And then when you come out on top, oh man, it was. That was that last game when we beat them and they tore the basket down. I'll never forget that. I've never seen a basketball crowd tear a basket down before. That's the only time I've ever seen it happen. In football, they tear the goalpost down. But to tear the basket goal down, I've never seen that before.
Wow. You know, I was doing the clubhouse stories for the Plain Dealer then. Bill Nichols was our beat writer, if you remember. And so I was back then during the playoffs, I was doing the sidebars in the locker room, so I didn't see the goalpost come down. I was in the locker room doing the interviews.
Oh, that's right.
Or maybe you saw the results of it. You saw the carnage afterwards.
Right. Yeah, because what happened was one guy got up there, and he was kind of just hanging up there, and then two more got up there. The next thing you know, it was just a bunch of people on top of it, and it just all came crashing down.
Did you guys think, we're going to do this every year?
Yes, we did. We had a feeling that we were going to be able to do it, but then free agency started hitting us the next year. Uh-huh. Clemens left. Oh. As a matter of fact, that's when Walt Frazier came to the team. Oh. And people started leaving, and once you start that, you messed up the chemistry, and that was it. We made the playoffs the next year, but it was a struggle.
Yes.
All right.
So then, by 19, you were there with the Cavs for 9 years, and then you were exposed in the expansion draft.
Yes.
What was that like? You were drafted by Dallas in the expansion draft.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And did that come out of nowhere?
Yes, it came out of nowhere. It was because, see, I had just signed a new deal with the Cavs.
You did.
Right. So I guess they figured, nobody would touch me. Because I just signed a new contract at my age, I was about 27, 28, about 28 then. But
Wait a minute. Now, your ninth, you were going into your 10th year.
Right.
You were like 32.
So I was about 30. That's right. Yeah, I was 30. That's right, because I retired the next year. I was about 32. Yeah. So, you know, I was surprised that they did take me. I was the first player that they picked in this expansion draft. And I was like, oh, man, I didn't want to leave Cleveland then. I was here, had to been here so long. But I had to pack up and go to Dallas.
Now, by then, Stan Albeck was the coach, right? He succeeded Bill Fitch.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Bill wasn't getting along with Nick Mulledy too good at that time.
Yeah, at that time, things were getting a little testy.
Yes. Could you guys tell it that there was something wrong with the relationship here?
Well, we knew that it wasn't, you know, because one thing, Coach Fitch didn't hide his emotions.
Really?
You know, he knew, you knew something was up. Yeah. You know, definitely something was up, but, you know, at that time, we just kind of, you know, went about our business. Yeah. But, you know, once I left, I lost track of what was going on there. Yeah.
And then shortly after that, the Cavs were sold to Ted Stepien.
Right.
and who?
Oh boy!
Yes.
Yeah, it was a tough. That was a tough time for the governor.
That was a tough period.
Right, that was tough there. I mean, it just he spent money, but he didn't know how to spend it.
Yes.
And it wasn't that he was cheap, because he wasn't that.
I know.
He didn't know what he was doing.
Yes. Yeah. Back in those days, Larry O'Brien, I believe, was the
NBA
commissioner.
Yes, that's right.
Every day, Larry would call Hal Leibovitz at the plain dealer and ask him, "What's he doing now?" Meaning Ted Stepien. What's he doing now?
And that's amazing.
Yes.
Amazing. Yeah. Wow. And but those were the. It was a comedy of errors then.
Yes, it was.
I mean,
not even Shakespeare could have written that.
That's right. I mean, we had the Poker for a Fight song. I mean, it just was a different era. And and again, he spent his money. He just didn't spend it wisely.
Yes. And he once said to me and to everybody, "Well, how can I be dumb if I'm so rich?"
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Yeah. He took things personal. He took a lot of stuff personal, but he just didn't listen to the right people.
That's right.
That's all it was.
And people took advantage of him.
Yes, you're right. They sure did. Yeah.
So, so now, the Dallas takes you in the expansion draft, and they promptly trade you to Washington.
Washington, right.
That was, of course, your hometown.
Right.
That was sort of a natural.
Right, yes. It was a natural, and it was funny. The Mavericks picked 24 expansion players before they picked the coach. And then they picked the coach, which was Dick Motta. Oh. And from the time they picked him, he got rid of all 24.
You're kidding.
Yep.
Wow.
He got all the players he wanted and got rid of all 24. I was the last guy he got rid of. I practiced that day, and then we got on the plane and went to Washington. I got traded to Washington that night, and I played against my teammates who I just practiced with that day. Yeah.
Was that awkward or not?
Oh, very awkward. It was a weird feeling.
Really?
Yeah, it was a weird feeling, but that's the part of the NBA a lot of people don't see and hear. They always hear about the glamour parts. Yeah. But believe me, there are just as many bad stories as there are good stories.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then 2 years later, or two seasons, anyway, after a year or two, you're retired.
Yes.
Out of the league.
Yes.
And so then what did you do?
Well, I went into the packaging business. Okay. And we did contract packaging, and we also did like heavy packaging. Like we did tank engines for the government. We shipped a lot of them to Turkey. We did
ship them to Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Tank engines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we shipped stuff like coffee, reincarnation. We'd shrink wrap it, box it, and ship it. You know, and we did that for about 4 years, and then the guy that owned the company that passed away, so I decided, plus it was hard, you know, leaving at 4 o'clock in the morning and then coming back on Friday around 4:30, 5 o'clock in the evening. That was just tough on myself and my family.
Was that in Indianapolis?
Yes.
That plant?
Mm-hmm, yeah. That was tough on my family and myself, so eventually I had to stop that.
But you had decided to remain living in Cleveland.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never, you know, it's funny, Dan, I never even thought about moving from Cleveland.
Really?
Never even thought about it. I mean, you know, people always ask me, well, when you going to move back to D.C.? And then, I never even thought about it. I've always felt comfortable here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Where do you live now?
I live in Warrensville now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, didn't you once own a house in Clifton Park in Lakewood? Did you own it as an investment or no?
Clifton
doesn't,
Park.
Doesn't
no,
ring
it doesn't
a bell
ring a bell.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then when did your career resume with the Cavs?
About 1991 or two, around in there, I started back.
Really?
With the team then and in the community relations department, and then I worked into the corporate sales.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then about then I started doing TV, a little bit of this and a little bit of that, you know. And but I started doing college games with Frank Lieber He was with the Mavericks, but I did college games before, right in that time. Uh-huh. I did the Big Ten. Yeah. And that's kind of how I got my feet wet with in the business. And then I got the chance with the Cavs.
And your broadcasting with the Cavs now has really expanded my mm-hmm. Your broadcasting style is part of Cavs lore now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, things have sort of taken off, and I really was not even thinking that way.
Really?
You know, I just was enjoying the way I just liked the game. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy having fun doing the game. Fred and I both, mm-hmm. you know, rather our objective is to have you, I want you to think that we are sitting with you at a bar watching the game, and that's it. Uh-huh. I don't want to talk down to you. Because everybody's played the game before in some capacity, maybe not as at the highest level, but you have some idea on how the game should be played. You know, so to talk down to someone like some of the announcers do, I just never got into that. So I enjoy having fun with the game, and you know, and some people have, yeah, they get a little upset with it because I may joke about one of their favorite players, but I'm having fun with it. I'm not trying to personally harm anybody. Yeah. I'm just having fun, uh-huh. you know, and, you know, that's the way I see it.
Now, some of your phrases, mm-hmm. do people shout them out to you as you walk down the street?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just yesterday, I was at the gas station, uh-huh. and I was getting gas, and uh-huh. guy came out, he goes, AC, throw the hammer down. You know, so a lot of that happens. A lot of that happens. Yeah, uh-huh. a lot of that happens.
Now, is that all you do for the team now?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm actually with the community relations and the corporate sales. I still do that, but it's not as much as I used to. But I still do. You know, whatever's needed, that's what I do now. I mean, I don't have any. I have 3 guys I report to, and I kind of just deal with those three departments. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you've got. I'm not going to say that you've led a charmed life, but in a way you did.
Yeah.
Look at you begin as the number one draft choice, and now you're the number one people's choice.
Thank you. I like that. Yeah, I never thought about it that way, but I wouldn't say it's. Everything has its ups and downs, but at the same time, you know, it's been a life that's been enjoyable, you know, and because I enjoy people, and people, especially kids, I try to do as much as I can to help, you know, help with their development, and so I have a golf outing that I have to raise money for kids that need the help, you know, so I enjoy doing that. It's just fun to give back. At least I enjoy giving back.
You still play a pretty mean game of golf, don't you?
I try to. But every once in a while, I'll shoot one over here in the woods. But I try to, yeah.
You know, if you had concentrated on golf mm-hmm. instead of basketball,
mm-hmm.
Let's say around your college age.
Yes.
Could you have been on the tour?
I would have given it a shot.
Would you?
Right, because... Here to tell you a story. When I first went to Notre Dame, the first day on campus,
yes.
I get a knock on the door. Yes. It was the golf coach.
No, really?
Yeah, he wanted me to play on the golf, at least come and see if I enjoyed golf. Uh-huh. He said because I was going to need another sport to kind of counteract basketball and this and that, you know, and he would like for me to travel for the golf team. And I was like, man, I don't want to play that game. Uh-huh. It wasn't popular. And so
you mean you had
nobody,
never played,
I had never
golf
played
before?
No. So now I wish I had went with him, because I'm a left-handed golfer now. I probably would have been right-handed if I had gone with him. You know,
are you naturally left-handed?
Not really. I write right-handed. Yeah. You know, but for some reason, I feel more comfortable left-handed really? Playing golf. Yeah.
Ever had a hole in one?
Yes.
How many?
I had 2 within a 2-week span.
Really?
Yep, and one was at Westfield, down in Akron, a 9-iron on the 11th hole, I think, and then the other one was at a course in Florida called Black Bear. another 9-iron I hit, and it almost the same as identical shot, because I hit a draw, the ball hit and bounced in the hole. One bounce, boom. One bounce, boom, twice. And I haven't been close to holding one since. And that was about, six, seven, 8 years ago. Yeah.
I only played golf on the Notre Dame golf course when I was a student.
Oh, okay.
Played about 10 times.
Okay.
Broke 100.
Ooh.
And this is not bad.
No.
No.
Yeah.
But I didn't enjoy it. It was time-consuming and expensive.
Oh, yes. Okay.
But people said, well, when you get good at it and you like it, you'll love it.
Right.
And they said it's like scotch. You have to acquire a taste for it.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I'll try scotch.
Right, but yeah.
No. Nothing worked. I wound up playing softball and drinking beer.
I got you.
But anyway, we digress. This is not about me, and it's about you. Can you define what was it about Cleveland that made you feel so comfortable here?
Well, I think it's the people. The people, they just have a certain character about them. And the one thing, there's no gray area. What I mean by that, the ones that don't like you, you know it. The ones that like you, you know it. There's no in between. There's not a lot of phony people here. You know, at least that's what I perceive of it. You know, they either like you or they don't like you. Mm-hmm. And they don't mind letting you know either or. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that to me just made me feel comfortable. I just felt that, again, these were genuine people.
Something that occurred to me is that all the ex-players who are broadcasters with the Cavs, you, Jim Jones, mm-hmm. Campy Russell, mm-hmm. were all members of the Miracle of 76.
Yes.
I think that the Cavs have been trying to recapture that glory, perhaps mm-hmm. subtly or maybe without really knowing, but that's what seems to be happening here.
Yeah, it does seem like they are trying to recapture that. And
and it's working, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Because these are three interesting people to listen to.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and so I'm thinking that you know, now that LeBron is back in the fold,
yes.
you know, they're going to get back into sharing the ball more, moving the ball more, similar to how we played, uh-huh. and being more of a 9-10 unit team as opposed to two or three guys yeah. doing all the work. I just think it's that time. That Coach Blatt, he teaches that, so I'm looking forward to the year. I'm looking forward to just getting to training camp and see what's going to happen, because by that time we should know who we're going to have, who's going to be on the team, who's not. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds.
What are your feelings about Coach Blatt? Am I pronouncing correctly?
Yes, Blatt.
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 Blatt. Blatt.
I like him because I've had a chance to observe his practices. I mean, he lets his assistants stay involved, but he kind of oversees it, you know. And it's nothing. You know, his personality is not caustic. It's more of you're very aware of him, but you don't. He's not overbearing, you know. I mean, like, you know, if a guy is, you know, a little slow, he might make a comment to him, you know, and then that's it. You know, he might get on the guy that's maybe not doing something right, but then they turn around in the practice, he'll pat him on his back, you know, hey, let's go now. We, you know, so you and what as a player, what that tells you is that, oh, he's focusing on you being the best you can be. And once you leave that court, once you get past that line, it's over. You know, we're two men, we can break bread together. And let's go to the next time. Let's try to be better when we get back on the floor. And that's, as a professional player, that's what you appreciate.
Of all the coaches that you played for, including mm-hmm. High school, a guy named Furlong?
Yes. I just saw him during the season.
Did you really?
Yeah,
he's still
around. Yeah, for the first still around. And,
oh, that's good.
It's funny when he he's in a home now. And because he still thinks he can take care of himself, you know, but that's how Coach was, so, uh-huh. you know. And so when he reeled him in, I don't think he realized I was sitting there. And when he found out I was sitting there, man, his eyes lit up, and it was really a great feeling to see him. Yeah, it was a great feeling to see him.
Okay, now, beginning with Furlong, who were your favorite coaches? Any similarities?
Furlong and Coach Fitz were basically the same.
Really?
Oh, I mean, they were hard nose driving type guys, always pushing you. Very strong emphasis on execution, you know, setting the pick right, using the pick right, passing the ball right. I mean, everything was, you know, I mean, to the point where, I mean, in high school, I couldn't go home until I made 10 straight free throws. And that was everybody, you know, until we had a couple guys that just couldn't do it, so he had to let them go eventually after being there 2 hours. You know, but that's how he was, and, you know, running the play properly. Don't break the play. Unless somebody falls down dead, you run the play, you know, and that's both coaches were like that. So I was fortunate to have those two guys because they taught me how to focus and how to stay focused.
Fitch had never played the pro game.
Right.
And so right off the bat, you weren't there his first year.
Mm.
But his second year, had he learned how to coach the pro game by then?
Yes, he was getting better at it. He was getting better at it. And because really, the pro game is more dealing with personalities than anything. Because most teams run the same type of sets. They just call them different terminology. You know, so I know he caught that on. He had that down. Cause we had some nice little plays he brought from Minnesota. You know, that's where he coached college. But, you know, he had just about, you know. And, again, the only thing he was grappling with was how to deal with the personalities. Yeah. Yeah, that was the only thing.
Now, when you said this earlier, I wasn't the beat guy in the Cavs for the Plain Dealer then, but I was around him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't remember any real problem personalities. I remember unusual personalities.
Right.
Like Gary Suter and people
Right. Yeah, well, that's unusual personalities, yeah. Right?
Yes.
That was a good way of putting it, yep.
But I never sensed that they were disruptive, but they were.
Yeah, it was some. It was. We had a few guys.
Would you tell us who?
That was. But you know, just guys that just would, you know, they were quirky guys. Like you said, though, it might not have been malicious type action, but just quirky guys. You know, that wouldn't practice hard or wouldn't do little things like that, and that's disruptive to a team when you're trying to form the team. You know, to his advantage, we got rid of all those guys. And
get rid of them? Who wanted them?
Well, what happened was then it's different. You just let them go, wave them. And that's what happened. I had six roommates in my first year. Six.
Really?
Yeah. Guys would come in, especially during a training camp, but three of them, they'd come in. Uh-huh. Hey, how you doing? AZ, boom, boom. You know, I'm your roommate. He'd be gone in a week. Fitz would cut him. Yeah, he'd be out of this. Another guy would come in, boom. Yeah, I'm like, wow, okay. So after a while, I started betting, how long are they going to last? You know, but that's kind of how it was, you know, back then, because the league was different. They had different rules then. It's hard to do that to a player now. You can't do those type of things, but that's how they handled it then.
So did you get a chance to know or like any of them?
Getting to know them was tough because back then it didn't have but only six guaranteed contracts on each team around that.
Really?
It wasn't all guaranteed contracts. Uh-huh. So practice was like a war every day. So you really never got – I never got to know those guys because – I was competing against them just like they were the other team, you know, because that's just how it was every day. I mean, and we had 1 year where we didn't have any exhibition game. We had 30 straight two-a-days.
Whoa.
Yes. The Players Association now would go crazy if you did that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 30 straight two-a-days. Yeah. We couldn't wait to play against another team.
Whose idea was that? Fitch's?
That was Fitch. Yeah. 30 straight days. That was unprecedented. I mean, I don't think anybody's ever done that before.
Did you want to strangle them to a...
No, we were close to strangling each other.
Oh!
I mean, we had got so tired of each other that, man, we couldn't wait. That first game, we felt free.
Really?
It was like, man, we couldn't wait to play against another team. Yeah, that was quite an experience. I didn't like going through that one.
Wow. You once said that the game was more physical then or less physical then?
It's more physical back when I played, because you could actually touch a guy and keep your hand on him. Uh-huh. And then you could body check a guy. In other words, if a guy would pass the ball and just kind of meander down the lane, I could get in this, I could pit him.
Really?
It wasn't nothing wrong. It's up to him to get out of my way.
Oh.
Now you can't do that. You can't get physical with a guy like that. You got to let him run. As they say, you got to let him go where he's going. You know, you can't stop, impede his progress. Now, they still try to get in your way now, but they don't make contact with you. They just try to make you sidestep, you know. But and then holding on, when you're guarding a guy and you can put your hand on him, you can keep control of him. And you can't do that now, you know. So it's just a little, to me, it's less physical. Some people might say it's more, but I think it's less because of the fact that you can't touch.
Well, players today are bigger, taller,
yes,
stronger, weight rooms. Did you ever lift weights back then?
No, it wasn't a popular thing. All we did was cardio.
Oh.
Cardio, I mean, we'd just run, we'd run about 5 miles a day.
Stairmaster or just,
you know,
run?
Just run the distance outside. And we'd do about 5 miles a day, and that was it. You know, and then that's how we stayed in shape during the off season.
Yeah. So was it... did Fitz change over the course of when you played with him?
Toward the end, he was starting to evolve into a coach that understood how to deal with the player and that type of thing. And I really think, like I said, Lenny Wilkins helped him a lot. I think Nate Thurman helped him a lot, you know, as far as understanding that you didn't have to browbeat everybody all the time to get success out of them. You know, so, and I really think he really took a giant leap right before I was getting ready to leave, you know, and then that's when he went to Boston and won a championship.
Yeah.
Right.
And then Stan Albeck
came
along. He was the coach at the point when you were picked up by Dallas.
Right.
What kind of a guy was he to play for?
He's a good guy to play for. I mean, he wanted to get up and down the floor, wanted to run, and he was very encouraging. You know, he always, you know, shoot it. Don't look over here at me. You out there. You got to play. You know, that type of thing. And defense, you know what I mean? But he was a fun type of – he was a good coach to play for. Yeah.
And then Dick Motta was your Dallas coach for a few games.
Yeah, right.
His own ways.
He had his own ways. That's right. And, man, that was like – that went by. It was like a blur. But,
really?
See, I got hurt again. I hurt my back there, and that really hurt me, because I didn't get a chance to play as much as I wanted to. And when I did play, I just couldn't move right, you know. And then I ended up getting traded to Washington.
You know, the problem was you should have taken up golf.
Yeah,
that coach had something.
That's right. I said, that's right. I would have stayed healthier.
So now you have for... I don't know what the last 25 years, you have seen the Cavs from a different perspective.
Right.
You've probably seen the Cavs coached by Lenny Wilkins.
Yes.
And by Mike Fratello.
Yes.
And then all the rest of them.
Right.
So did any of those strike you as being, what were they like anyway, from your perspective?
Yeah.
The smart ones,
naturally,
the
Lenny,
styles.
Lenny, because I played with Lenny.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I have a little affinity for Lenny. But Lenny was the man. I mean, and the one thing that amazed me about Lenny, he always scored a basket after timeouts. I mean, he was uncanny with that.
Really?
As a coach. Yeah, he always had a play where it would get him a basket. Well, foul shot. I mean, it was really amazing. But I like Lenny. Lenny was very good, you know, and Fratello was very good, because Fratello had less talent, but he got the most out of it.
Really?
Right. And one good thing about Lenny and Fratello, they could think on their feet. See, that's the one thing you have to do in as a coach is being able to think on your feet. Because during the game is when you have to make basically your biggest adjustments are happening as the game is progressing. You know, I mean, you do all the X's and O's, prepare for the team, prepare your team before. But when you actually get out there in the game, that's when your real decision time has to be made, because that has a direct effect on the game.
And then, I've lost track of them since then. I should have gone through the list, done my homework better, but there were just so many, in and out, back and forth.
Right.
Let me see. Can you remember them?
Oh, I mean, the coaches?
Yeah. After Fratello, I mean, they just...
I know.
Becomes a blur as
right.
They just came and went.
Right,
you know?
Right. I mean, I know after Fratello, there had to be...
There was one guy that just sat in a chair all the time and didn't have much personality and didn't show much fire. Well, it didn't even seem to be very friendly.
I know. Silas coached.
That's the one I'm thinking of, Silas.
Silas coached, and you had, I'm
Mike
going
Brown
blank.
Twice.
Mike Brown twice. I mean, so I'm trying to figure out who.
But then the general managers.
Yes.
That were here.
Right.
Wayne Embry.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he knew a lot about that.
Yes. Oh, yeah. General manager. Well, Harry Weltman.
Harry Weltman.
Right.
Who
right.
died earlier in this 2014
right.
year.
Right.
But let's go back briefly to Wayne Embry's career here.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course he succeeded. George Carl was the coach.
Right.
Another one of the coaches before all the chaos started.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it after the chaos?
Yeah, right.
There's been chaos
everywhere.
Yes. I liked George Carl.
Yes.
I thought he was a very good coach.
Right.
Harry Weltman fired him.
Right.
And I never knew why I liked them both.
I know. I didn't understand that one either.
Yes.
All right. So, but
when George Carl was fired, we didn't see him for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, he called a press conference to explain his side of everything.
Oh, okay. I got it.
At the Tavern of Richfield, at a second floor room,
right.
big room up
mm-hmm.
there. And so we went out there on a fine summer afternoon, and there was Harry there was George to explain his position, and he had a little bar in the corner,
mm-hmm.
which is called a press conference, and nothing wrong with having a bar.
Right.
Except it was a cash bar.
Oh!
And I'll never forget, Tony Rizzo was a morning guy on Magic, and he was a morning sports guy, and he mm-hmm. wasn't making much money.
Right.
But he came out there, and he said, oh, how this is, and he goes out there with his tape recorder,
mm-hmm.
and he said, this is nice, they have a bar. So we went up and ordered a scotch, and the guy said, that'll be $3. And Riz had to dig his pocket. All he had was $3.
Oh, man.
And he needed gas.
Oh.
But anyway, there have been a million laughs, a million tears, but a million laughs
mm-hmm.
With this franchise. Now, the long pause here,
mm-hmm.
because suddenly there's a lot of things coming into my mind as,
okay.
And the Stepien years.
Right.
You were far away from it at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but then he was going through coaches left and right and general managers.
Mm-hmm.
How about this is what I'm trying to remember, and that is I read Lenny Wilkins' book.
Okay.
And the trade of Ron Harper.
Yes.
He said he had a team that could have beaten the Bulls and won the NBA championship.
Yeah, right. Right,
because
I believe that.
Ron Harper could guard Michael Jordan.
Right.
But it was Gordon Gund,
mm-hmm.
who owned the team then. He got bad reports on Ron Harper.
Right.
And he insisted that they trade Ron Harper.
Right.
He traded away the chances to win the championship.
Mm-hmm.
There always seems to be something some catastrophic moment that gets in the way of this team winning a championship. Yeah. Jim Jones' broken foot in 1976.
Right.
Later on, the trade of Ron Harper.
Right.
And then LeBron leaving as a free agent.
Right.
Maybe the tide is turning now.
I hope so.
You'll hope so.
I hope so, because I'm ready to experience a winner.
Yes.
I'm ready for that. I don't care what sport. I just want a winner.
Well, now we have potential again.
Right.
Yes.
Right, and that's the key word. I mean, so now you have something to look forward to. Yes.
So that's where we leave it. Here in 2014, with Austin Carr, once again, we are talking about a team with potential.
Yeah.
A team that has been our legacy for the last 44 years.
Right, right.
Okay.
Right. Well, you know, potential is what it is. Hopefully, let's keep our fingers crossed.
That's right. Austin, thanks for joining us here.
Dan's
Public
pleasure.
Libraries Sports Icon Series. You're
Thank
one of
you.
Our icons, one of our favorite icons.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.